smartest man in the world, Poopcast, takes to the ether, this time from the enchanting and somewhat spooky confines of the Koreatown's most enchanting comedy confabulation, the Dynasty Typewriter, located here at the Hayworth Theater at the corner of Rita and Hayworth. Well, you can applaud there if you like. It's a lovely venue, and they've treated us so nicely here. Tanan, Jazz, and everybody who works here, and all the other time we were here before, it's an elegant place, and they give you popcorn backstage, and it's award-winning popcorn. It's not just popcorn. Every kernel of this corn is vouched for by someone whose ancestry is undeniable and has been lovingly and painstakingly unearthed, not just with paper records, but through oral history. And so mind that every bite that you take, you let wander all across your teeth like some nomad seeking sanctuary in a white and foreign mountain surrounded by a pink ocean. Let this be your guide tonight as you chew this popcorn. And I want you to know that the Dynasty Typewriter popcorn, of which I have partaken before the show, and I'm still extracting shells from underneath my gums. There's nothing like that feeling about popcorn. It's the third or fourth bite where you go, oh, really? And then you're like, yeah. And then you suck on it for a while. That's the first gambit right there. And it doesn't, that never works because there's not enough suction. A shark doesn't have enough suction to get a husk of popcorn. You know, just that you never see sharks eating popcorn. There's two reasons for this. One, they're carnivores who plumb the trackless depths of the oceans. And two, they can't get the husks out from under their teeth, and they don't shed their teeth fast enough for not be an irritant, and they have to have a remora come in from underneath and ply them with the small shark implements, which are very difficult to obtain in the ocean, as the CVSs are often not 24 hours, surprisingly. You know, one of the first bathysphere expeditions in the late 50s revealed that the all-night situation at the bottom of the ocean, as illuminated as it is by a dazzling myriad of creatures that speak to every tendril of the master plan's ultimate and intimate creativity, every vibrating, ululating, undulating, luminescent light that strikes off of these bizarrely shaped creatures that are often people. There's a definite lack of nightlife. I mean, my understanding is that Alicia Bridges and later Gloria Estefan both visited the Marianas Trench in a small bathysphere of their own making. Gloria Estefan's bathysphere was called the Miami Sound Machinist. And as they descended into the depths, both Alicia Bridges, God rest her soul, and the immortal disco star, and Gloria Estefan, both remarked that they could not turn the beat around. And that's, I think, what's going on down there. So think about that while you're eating your popcorn tonight. Really? That seems oblique. The show has taken a... I've already forgotten what I was looking up when the fucking show started. So let's skip that and move right into... We're at the Dynasty Typewriter. They have award-winning popcorn and, of course, Swiss chocolate that's been purloined in the dead of night by a group of daring bandits who made a midnight raid and made their way out over the mountains of Switzerland, and then through Belgium, and an underground network of people who don't know each other's names and only contact each other using pieces of paper secreted by certain rodents that are trained. And so, understand the difficulty and the elegance with which everything's been laid on for you here tonight. If I could describe the surroundings one more time to the listeners who heard the Proopcast from not but 1 month ago here in these same confines, the war against the Germans is in its fifth year. We've been relegated to what can only be described as a basement, where although supplies are stored, there's also pianos and candles without flames, so that there's no terrible accidents and the Nazis aren't alerted to our whereabouts by some sort of exposure to the light. We don't want any minor or major conflagrations to let them know of our ceaseless nocturnal perambulations and assignations with each other in the myriad tunnels of this installation here, the Dynasty Typewriter, or if it is that really its name. It might not. It might be a cover for a group of theaters that has different performers here, some of whom are more popular than others. And that was a joke. I'm just being a dick. Go with the flow. I will. We've been given several things here. When I say candles, but they're not really candles. They're that kind of... Is anyone on lights at all? Is anyone working the show anymore? Does anyone feel a strange vibration in the room? If you can hear us, knock against a terrible metal tub full of ice. That makes no sound whatsoever. There's candles that ain't lit, and there's purple lights, and the purple lights. I never meant to cause you any sorrow. Never meant to cause you any pain. Only wanted one thing, that's what you love me. Only want to see you eating popcorn under purple lights. Purple lights. This can go on. There's two pianos. No, there's a typewriter on one end, and then a piano on the other end. It's a stand-up piano, upright stand-up piano. It's an upright piano as opposed to a grand piano. Is that what distinguishes them? By the way, I'm musical, but I'm not that musical. But I'm aware that a giant piano that one sits at that is in the shape of this, like Liberace's pool, is a grand piano. And that the ones that are like that are often played in westerns and honky-tonks and movies that are about Storyville in New Orleans before World War I are often that kind of piano. Stand-up? What did I call it? Upright piano. And then the piano player, when you play an upright, is often required to wear... armbands on their shirt and have a stripy shirt with a waistcoat that's usually red velvet and perhaps a Darby or a Hamburg of some kind. They optionally may smoke a cigar and have a beer placed just there. And then when the shit hits the fan or someone drops someone, the piano stops ominously and there's a cutaway to the piano player who goes... Or fantastically, if it's a good Western, everybody goes like this back from the table. Shane has been on way too much lately, and I haven't watched it. I watched one time through. It's good in a lot of ways. Some people would say that the kid is repetitive. I find the kid a voice of... Shane's a movie. I started in the middle. What kind of movie, Greg? It's a Western. Is it really a Western? It's not a traditional Western. How is it not a traditional Western? It doesn't have any of the elements I just spoke of. It relies on no cliches. There is a startlingly blue, gigantic, and if you see it in a movie theater, takes up 3/4 of the screen sky in a bunch of the shots, which makes it not at all like what you think of a Western, of a closed atmosphere of a bar, of a saloon, a John Ford, right, putting the ceiling in and whatnot, even though John Ford had dazzling landscapes. It's made by a crazy person named George Stevens. Well, I say crazy. He was a wonderful director and made... screwball comedies before the war, and then they sent him to the war, and he had a lot of experiences in the war that were traumatic in so much as they liberated concentration camps and saw a great deal of things that one oughtn't see. And when he came back, he made Diary of Anne Frank, The Bible. He made a movie called The Bible, did he not? No, he made The Greatest Story Ever Told. Sorry, I confused it with the... he made my favorite Jesus movie because Max von Sydow is Jesus in it, and he's a 6'4" Swedish guy with a Swedish accent, and they make no effort to deal with that in the movie at all. So he's running around the Holy Land. Van Heflin's in it in Salmenio. It's a great movie. We've talked about it before on the show, probably too much, but it is a wild George Stevens movie because he'd go, "Blessed are the poor, for they shall be... Blessed are the meek in spirit, for those who found the kingdom of heaven." It's fantastic. And then on the moment that he's carrying the cross and he falters on his way up the hill to his final terrible demise, which is also sudden and weird if you know anything about history, right? I'm not going to go into crucifixion because I want you to like me and listen to the show. But suffice to say that what happened to Jesus on the day is an anomaly. In any case, as he's stumbling and faltering on his last few steps, Sidney Poitier is found in the crowd and runs out and helps him write the cross on his shoulder and gives him a slap on the back and is like, take one for the team, right? And like, Max von Sydow's like, "Danke bitte," you know, and Sidney Poitier is like, "Thank you, Jesus," you know. It's just the greatest scene. That the thing about movies is they're magic because nothing really ever happened like that. People make fun of Showgirls, and rightfully so, because in Showgirls, they don't do anything real. Like as Tina Turner said, we don't do anything nice and easy. In a movie, you expect some verisimilitude. Like, were I to drink from this glass, I would just go like, while I was talking and keep going. I wouldn't go like this. It was a David Lynch movie. Right? It's magic. I want Sidney Poitier to help Jesus. We all do. It's not in the Bible, but it should have been. There's so many revisions in the Bible. It was written over such a long period of time. Like the Constitution, why is the Bible and the Constitution inviolate? Why can't we go... the Constitution isn't. At any time, we can dig back in and put another amendment in, like, oh, I don't know, the ER fucking A. But... why is the Bible inviolate? Why can't we go back and go like, and so from the crowd, an Oscar-winning actor, director, writer, educator, and activist strode forth to see if our Lord needed extra help on his last few fumbling steps up the mountain in Calvary and Golgotha on that awful afternoon when the heavens broke forth and the Romans played for his robes, page 2. And you're like, because the Constitution is bullshit, and I'm holding it here somewhere. No, it's in the dressing room. Fuck it, I'm not getting it. I memorized it. Here's how it goes. I'm white. It's Article 2. I continue to be white. Article 3. Slaves, what about it? Article 4. We're thinking about it. Article 205. All right, we thought about it. Maybe it's bad. Article 9006, women, right, shit, fuck, right, women. And that's where it ends. Oh, wait, Article 15, no more booze. Three articles later, please, I'll do anything, I don't care anymore, I will debase myself in front of you, I will give you my children's children. That's what those amendments are. The Constitution, in a lot of ways, is like when Augustus, the Roman emperor, died, he was never called emperor. He called himself first citizen, but he had the Senate grant him enormous powers. We can look forward to all of this. What month is it? May-ish, June-ish. Although the Ides are coming up, right? We've had the Calends, but we have not had the Ides. And for those of you who aren't hip to the jive, March, all Roman months were divided into the Calends, the Ides, and there's some other bloody thing at the end. And the Junipers, I don't know, I just made that up. And it sounds good, the Junos. And everyone kept a small shrine in their house for that changing of the date. And they would eat a fig and lay with a small dormouse under their head each night. And the youngest daughter had to jump over the mantelpiece wearing a wreath in her hair. That's what all Roman rituals are like. It's all so fucking weird that you're like, I don't even know why we're bothering with this shit. There's one where they chase each other down the street with fronds and whip each other and shit. And you're like, you guys are fucking freaks. Just say that you wanted to be Greek. Just say it, okay? Because you're acting that way, but you're not doing it. For what, 1,000 years? Okay, you wanted to be Greek. You wanted to bugger people and then recite poetry and then ask personal questions. What do you think the universe is? I don't know. Leave me alone. So, Augustus. Well, Caesar's a little more to the point, I think. Who was his uncle and adopted father? And that's the Caesar you're thinking of, the one who invented that delicious salad with croutons and that marvelous haircut that George Clooney adopted in the early 90s for a period. Where men who are follically challenged can push it forward, whoosh it forward. That's what he was doing. He took in his later years, and he only made it to like 55 or something, wearing the laurel wreath that he'd been awarded sometime before in his hair all the time, which you weren't supposed to do. It was supposed to be for ceremonial. But Caesar's hair was kind of flippy, so he was like, oh, fuck, I'm wearing it. And then awesomely, when he came back to Rome after France, Gaul, and I'll say... call it what you like. Coming back from France after 10 years, you can call it Gaul if you like. I'm calling it Celtic.
He would adopt thigh-high red boots, which he claimed, thigh-high red boots.
And he wore a red cloak,
famously, in battle, Caesar, when he wanted the troops to get whipped. And the reason why the troops liked him wasn't that he was the nicest person in the world. It's that he had that rare thing as a leader. He was unbelievably savage and determined, and also canny and smart, and surrounded himself with smart people that he listened to. But he was a fascist in every caliber, so there was no going back, which they knew. And three, he ate soldiers' food and laid. He didn't have posh quarters and shit like that. He knew everybody's name. Like, he knew guys' names in the army, like, in the, as a general. Hey, you know, Testicles, what's going on and shit. And they, you know. Right? When the emperor, or he wasn't the emperor, when he's the general. And then when they doled out the money at the end of the campaigns and shit, that was fucking handed out at tables, right? Like, you know, you mustered and they gave you your fucking talents, right? And if you were on double pay or triple pay because of heroism or losing your eye or your ear or your tongue or your balls or whatever it was, and they gave you extra money. Oh, the old days were great. Who doesn't want a time machine? I've been watching a lot of time machine stuff lately. I'm going back to this. I haven't finished. But I want to take a small detour to the Rod... I almost said Rod Stewart. Rod Stewart... made the best time machine movie. It was in the 70s when he was at his height. And it was just, yeah. I didn't know what day it was. Remember that one? That was all about the time machine. He didn't know what day it was because it was centuries ago. The thing about being at my show is, like a famous scene in The Time Machine with both Rod and Taylor, you'll see people's wardrobe in the room change and evolve because that's how slowly the show is going. You're like, wait a minute, we were all wearing like clothes from the late 2020s, and then all of a sudden we're in futuristic like 2050 gear where people have like weird bags on their heads and no one has phones anymore. There's just like a small pinprick that circles your head and you just think into it and shit. And then it switches back to this, the 80s, and we're all in members-only jackets and jellies with socks underneath them. Some of us are wearing neon fucking O-rings. Oh yeah, I'll take you there and you're gonna hate it. Relax, don't do it. So Caesar came back from France and he had a lot of money and he killed all the French people and the Belgians and a bunch of Germans too, and they had a bunch of people join him. In any case, he came back with all this bread. He crossed the Rubicon. We're talking about now. What does crossing the Rubicon mean? It means the rule of law is no longer extant because you've decreed it so. What does crossing the Rubicon mean? It means the potential for you taking over and never relinquishing power is certainly there. What does crossing the Rubicon mean? It means all future elections are null and void because I presuppose those elections. The fact that I have crossed it with my army, and this is a metaphor, with my army of Bill Burr and Mick Mulvaney and Mike Pompeo and blah, 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 is an indication to you that the election might happen, but I may not be happy with what happens in the election. And you don't know what fucking tricks I'm going to pull, including dying before the election. That was just a wishful possum in the wilderness. Just imagine a possum running along the road and all on its own, autonomous of this show or any human thought or anything that's attached to me in any way other than the thought and direction and general owning this. When the possum's running, its little tiny claws scrabbling to gain purchase on the sandy rocks. It's horrible, horrible jaws and teeth. Nothing's as horrible as the possum's muzzle. Even possum children are like, Mom, for reals? Because they have a terrible rictus, don't they? They're all like Lon Chaney in London After Midnight. The incredible Dr. Fibes, is it? Is he the one who has that? Or is there another Vincent Price one where he's got the terrible rictus? The abominable. What did I call him? Did I say he was incredible? He's incredible, but he's more abominable than he is incredible. If you met Dr. Fives, you would be like, this is incredible. You'd be like, this is abominable. That's exactly what it is. Thank you for the assist on that. Koozie from the corner. Yeah, my scorecard's from 1959. I just gave Bob Koozie an assist. Couldn't you even go Oscar Robertson? No. I'm that old school. I don't know why I'm looking at this paper. There's nothing on it of any interest. So he had himself declared, when he came back, through several manipulations, got the Senate to sort of fold on him, and didn't really do what other Romans did before and after him, which Augustus certainly did, which was kill everyone that opposed him and take their money. That was called proscriptions in ancient Rome. It happened before him, and it happened after him as soon as Augustus took power. And he didn't. He was lenient with his enemies, and a lot of people went like, well, that's your undoing. And it's like, well, wow, he was a genocidal dictator, and yet his undoing was his mercy. I have no more room for irony in this sentence, so we're going to move on to the next sentence. So after they done did him, Augustus took over, and he was in a triumvirate. And then eventually, as 50 years wound by, he was the sole leader of Rome. And at his death, he before his death, he had stela, or bronze plaques, rather, with every single one of his accomplishments printed on it so that everyone could read it forever and ever. And he had it stuck up in Rome. And there's, why do we know this? Because there's copies of it all over the empire. And there's one in Africa and the Middle East and everything that are exact copies. And it's called the Res Gestae. This is what I done did. And that brings me at long last to what we're doing here tonight. This is my Res Gestae. It should be involved in the walls of this room, stapled to them, with dick jokes included. I found this town made of non-satirical protoplasmic bullshit, and I left it with trenchant fucking knob gags. Is Article I. Article II. A lot of sexist dudes had to taste my fucking furious wrath and shit, because, yeah. I want to talk about this bowl, because it's really the elephant in the room. I was told Tony, who's managing tonight, as they would say in England, a woman said this to us years ago. Jennifer and I were staying in a hotel in Bayswater, and it was a while ago. Solomon Torres lost the last game of the season. That's what year it was, 1993. We were in that room. And in any case, that was so obscure that I don't expect anyone listening to the show to understand anything I'm talking about right now. Clearly, I've taken leave of my senses. This is like an Orange 45 rally in North Carolina or whatever. There's medicals! They should impeach! Solomon Torres was a pitcher for the San Francisco Giants who lost the last game of the season in 1993 against the Los Angeles Dodgers. And I don't know if I'm watching baseball this season. There's been a lot of cheating. I thought you were for cheating. You love Barry Bonds. It's true. I do love Barry Bonds, and I defend everything he did. But I really decry that the owners try to fob this shit off. And the commissioner a couple of weeks ago, whose name is Rob Manfred. I'm not kidding. Rob Manfred. It's a short, illustrative sentence about his character. Rob Manfred. Think about it. So there was this whole controversy over the Astros cheating over a couple of world championships. And they give them a loving cup that's smaller than this and a trophy. And it's called the Commissioner's Trophy. And the commissioner actually denigrated it and did that whole 45 GOP thing of, you know, just fucking diminishing everything. Who gives a shit, right? Who cares unless it's Jesus? He goes, it's just a piece of tin. A piece of metal, he called it. And then the third baseman for the Dodgers the next day went, the reason we all get up real early and have our whole careers, the reason we're here early every day and try as hard as we can for 6 months, or 8, 10 months, the whole year, because he says we train in the off season, is because of the cup that you called a piece of metal, and it's called the Commissioner's Cup. The one the ball players win is called the Commissioner's Cup, and the commissioner called it a piece of metal because he was trying to defend the owners cheating by winning pennants. What are we to draw from this, Greg? Oh, I hate to think that my father was right about anything. That's what I get from it. He would have said everyone was cheating all the time and that everyone was just taking money all the time. And my argument was, no, everyone's not. And I think I'm right. The ball players all weren't, and they're well hacked off about this. And I think they wish it was handled better. The fans certainly weren't cheating in any way, nor did we deserve this kind of nonsense. And will it get sorted? In a half-assed sports way, kind of like the NFL. And, you know, women's soccer is very close to having a decision made. We might go to court to see if they get the money they deserve. By that, I mean U.S. women's soccer, Megan Rapinoe and Carly Lloyd and that unbelievable, fabulous championship team that is, let's face it, maybe the greatest configuration in American sporting history, World Cups, Olympic gold medals. They're fixing to go to Tokyo to play. I can't think of another international team that America's put on the field that's won as many and had so many familiar figures over a long period of time. Kittens. It's extraordinary. And so, in conclusion, and thank you for coming to tonight's show. I've been given a gigantic bowl on stage. Tony said, I'm going to bring you some ice. And I thought that was the traditional, because I live in a 1950s world where bellboys walk by with circular hats that they wear on elastic bands around their chin and go, call for Philip Morris or whatever. And they go, Mr. P. Ropes, you wanted at the front desk. I'm Mr. P. Ropes. Well, there's been a delivery for you, Mr. P. Ropes. Thank you. You don't mind coming in my office for a moment. I have a pencil-thin mustache. So the last time we played here, they gave me a gigantic quart of vodka. And this time, they've limited me to the, I believe this is called house arrest, is the size of this bottle. Because you can get crazy, but not too crazy. There's a liquor store here in the neighborhood. It's 3 blocks that way, through some of the roughest terrain in Los Angeles. I don't know if anyone read Judge Dredd or saw the movie Demolition Man, but the 3 blocks between here and that liquor store over there are cursed earth. So I have to ration this out as the evening wears on, much like the war. And what I didn't expect, and I'm going to say expect, I expected a small bucket of ice. I didn't expect tongs, because I've unsuccessfully used tongs hundreds of times in my life. I've never understood ice tongs, because I don't want one cube. I want a red solo cup, so I can go like this, and then put it in my glass, because I want a lot of ice. I don't have a red solo cup at home. Because I'm not, you know, I'm sophisticated. But I don't have tongs either. I'm not like Nick and Nora Charles. In the Thin Man movies, sometimes William Powell, who plays the Thin Man, will wake up, he boozes constantly. And sometimes he'll wake up in the middle of the night. In the middle of the night, in their elegant New York apartment where they sleep in separate beds and they both have the silk pajamas on. And he'll wake up in the middle of the night and next to his bed's a bottle of whiskey and he'll pour himself a drink and go like this, like 2 a.m. and then go back to bed. And you're like, that's awesome. What are you doing? How high can you be? Don't ask me that. But I mean, really. So they've given me this tiny bottle. Tiny bottles. As my friend Tony Hawks, our friend from England, Jennifer's and mine. Tony Hawks was a comic, and is a comic, and used to do a bit in the 90s that went like this. They call, and his delivery was hilarious, they call the Snickers tiny candy bar the fun size. I think it should be called the disappointingly small size. And then my other favorite one was, people say that you can't have your cake and eat it too. I don't know. I think a bit of cake is nice. The second one is pure genius because I don't know why it's funny. I'm really smart and I've written a lot of jokes. I've heard a lot of jokes. I don't know why that joke's funny. I've given it some thought. The first one's hilarious because it's true. Nothing's fun because it's smaller. Hello, ladies. Am I right or am I right? Hello?
Maria Banford has canceled Greg's next show due to being funnier.
No, nothing's funnier when it's smaller. Nothing's tastier when it's... some things. I was eating a paramecium the other day, and I thought... I just wanted to say paramecium. I don't even know what they are. I mean, I know what they are, but I'm not for it. I mean, I'm for it, but I don't root for them. I'm not, like, on a paramecium team, or I don't belong to any groups. One-celled animals get the short shrift in my existence. It's because I have multiple cells. If I was like a 2 or 3-celled person, I'd be like, oh, they're okay. But at this level, fuck it. Fuck you, paramecium. I know I need you, but like, you know, make a movie or whatever. Remember in War of the Worlds, both of them, 3 of them, all of them, 5 of them, 10 of them, now there's a lot of them. There was a 70s one that was a rock and roll one that was on an album in England. I don't know if anybody remembers that one, but it was a compilation of... Thank you. It was called War of the Worlds. Jeff Lynne and David Essex? Loads of stars. And then it went... And then he'd narrated and stuff. Then they came across the plains of Sussex. Right? Because the opening line of the book is, what is it? Unbeknownst to Earth, for years, we had been... What was it? We were being watched. Right, which makes it good. So I watched the Tom Cruise one the other day. Yeah, okay, fuck you. I don't have that much time at home, but when I'm at home, I like to spend it richly. I do bronze rubbings. I do little tapestry and whatnot. I knit one, purl two, whatnot. What do they call that? Sewing? I don't know what they call it. And, you know, there's... Well, there's not. But in any way... I was watching the Tom Cruise one, and Tim Robbins is in it. And I think it's Spielberg, of all people. It's War of the Worlds, but what if there was, you know, like, no humor? And at the end, if you recall, and would have kept this part, which I was quite proud of him for, H.G. Wells was a brilliant writer of science fiction for 2 reasons. One, the premises are great, but 2... He had no working knowledge of science, so he made things up and tried to make it fit the technology. And because it was 1900 and they clearly had movies and, you know, planes were going to happen and electric lights, he was aware of all that jazz. He was a, you know, well-done person in London. He could extrapolate and go, there's going to be a ray that's strong enough to fly through space. There's going to be a thing that's big enough to fucking, and he just did it. And he went, the Martians were watching us, and they came to Earth, and they had destructive rays. And then the thing that kills the Martians, spoiler alert! If you've never seen War of the Goddamn Worlds at this late date in your life. But there's young people listening. Greg, what about their hopes and dreams? As Vince Lombardi, one of the great psychopaths of American sports, said, we venerate psychopaths, and especially if they're white, right? Douglas MacArthur, you know, Dick Cheney. Well, I don't know if he's venerated, but he's certainly in the mix. Mm. Vince Lombardi was an assistant coach with the Navy, was it? Anybody know his? And the New York Giants, whatever. He went to Green Bay and he became the head coach. And his famous quote is, winning isn't the only thing, it's everything. And then, fantastically, one of the stories about our Vince, he died of colon cancer. Why? Because he would not let them put anything up his butt. And I'm not kidding about that. He went to the doctor and they're like, we need to do a colonoscopy on you. You're 55 years old. And he was like, no one is doing that. And his friends even went like, Vince, come on. And he was like, mm-mm-mm. So that's what he died of. It's a beautiful story when you think about it. And it really is. This is a sports story that has it all. Like Babe Ruth disappointing because you're like, oh, come on. He should have lived to be old and he would have dressed as Santa. You know what Babe Ruth would have been like. He would have gotten cooler. Imagine Babe Ruth in like the early 60s going on TV and shit with a fucking funny hat on and shit and going, oh, well, you know, I had a lot of homers. You'd have been like, this is awesome. Or Lou Gehrig. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of fun on those teams. So much fun, I can hardly stand it. You Lou Gehrig's stiff as a starched fucking collar. Gorgeous, man. Fabulous baseball player. Who are we talking about? Don't. I remember. Lionel Stander, the great actor. I don't know either. It matters not a whit, because what I'm about to get to is so cataclysmic and so conclusive that I think a lot of the other, Kalins, about the Ides. The Ides are in the middle of the month, right? And Caesar, three nights before, went to a dinner party and said, at this fancy dinner party, and by the way, imagine a Roman dinner party, right? Especially with a lot of rich people. There's couches, there's a fountain, there's fruit, there's scented air, there's people playing music, there's slaves everywhere, providing everything for you from a manicure, pedicure, bringing fruit, wine, whatnot. Many courses of exotic shit that we would never eat, like flamingos and things that you make your stomach churn at the very thought of it. But for them, imagine. And then, of course, awesome, sexual assault, and, just fantastic. And you were reclining on a couch and eating with one hand. If you were left-handed, tough going in the ancient days. You leaned on your left hand and you ate with your right hand like that, and they brought plates and whatnot. And then, a bowl of wine, a crater, whatnot. Maybe a cup and realm and shit. I've seen the movies with Stephen Boyd. Fucking Ben-Hur, man. I will give you 4-1. Yes, better than any. What does he say? Better than any Arab. And the Arab goes, bravely said. They said, what's the best death to Caesar? And he said, unexpected. And then, of course, he got exactly... mind you, this is all written after the fact, so it makes it better. Because someone went back and fictionalized it. This is what history is, you guys. This is Women's History Month. Have you ever read, when you were in grade school or high school, a book that emphasized women's history? Did any book you ever read start with, well, A to B Wells? No. We got thrown Betsy Ross, who sewed the first flag, was it? And then evidently evaporated right after that incident. Helen Keller, or was it Sarah Barton we got? Clara Barton, rather. From the Civil War, and then sometimes Florence Nightingale, if you were super lucky, who were both almost contemporaneous. Nightingale is in the Crimean War, and Clara Barton's in the Civil War, and they helped people by being a nurse. Isn't that great? Instead of, no, they were pioneers in going, the sanitation is absolutely shit, and more people are dying of infection than anything else, and that's what we really have to work on right here, right now, because you didn't make any provision for it in your crappy war plan. You just decided to throw people out there one after the next. I remember having a book called, not Profiles in Courage, Bold Journeys. That was this was the 60s. It was like my third or fourth grade history book.
Bold Journeys.
A white man strode alone with lots of Indians helping him to find the way. We don't know their names. Then he founded civilization and gold. Steamboats. Dun 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 dun. The radio. Yes, white people, we've been a persistent cause through all of history. No one else helped at all. Jazz was invented by some random people. We wish we knew who they were. And as for corn and cotton, well, they were just there. I'm going to start doing a show every week, kind of a white people history show, because I feel, in light of Women's History Month, it's really time to focus on men's history a little bit more. When will we be heard from? When will men get their story told? That's all I want to ask this crowd. So they've given me this gigantic bowl. By the way, the night before, Caesar's wife was in a terrible state. She'd had nightmares all night. And when they woke up the next morning, she said to him, "You mustn't go to the Senate. I've had an awful dream." And he was like, "I'll handle this. It's okay. Don't worry about me. I'll be all right." On the way there, with his retinue, a soothsayer, as was so often found in downtown Rome in those days, 44 BC, waylaid him in the forum and said, "Beware the Ides of March." And he said, "The Ides have come." And she said, "But they have not yet gone." And he fucked off to the Senate, where everything happened. What is your point on this? I'm struggling to find it as well. I want you to know that as fictional characters, we're all on the same page here. Everyone can feel the same thing that I feel, like the typewriter, the dynasty typewriter, the overarching end of the war, 1945 dynasty typewriter that pounds ceaselessly like Joseph Cotton writing a terrible Western novel in The Third Man, has briefly paused while we all regroup and try to find ourselves. Ah, this enormous bowl of ice. It was brought in by Tony early on in the proceedings. At a moment, we must start the show. Tony brought this in and he goes, "I'm bringing in ice." And I thought, well, a little bowl, a little bucket, not a bowl. A bowl of ice is weird. I mean, I like a bowl of ice. I've made a bowl of ice. My third album is called, it's not, but it ought to have been. Gordie Howe did a spoken word album called A Bowl of Ice, as did the Esposito brothers. And this is what you find in bowls of ice. These unpleasant, rather large chunks that you have to hack at and or pour stuff over until you hope they melt. We're all hoping for this, the perfectly formed weird ice machine cube that has the weird chute in it. Why is there air in the middle of the cube? What is it formed over? Are there like weird like popsicle sticks sticking up through the ice machine and like it's just like the Matrix or whatever and then they all freeze and shit? That's confusing. Then there's this one. Oh, I got stepped on, I'm broken. Ow. Then there's, what the devil? It has a beard and shit? So he brought me this. And I want you to notice again that the bottle of vodka that he brought is not airline small. It's not a traveler. Does anyone call them travelers? I remember a girl in college calling the small airline-sized bottles travelers, meaning that's what you took with you. No one else? All right. What I'm getting now is a lot of judgment. And I don't think I dig it that much. You see this? This is how long you've got to live. And it's not long, my pretty. It's not long. Annie M. I'll give you Annie M. When there's this little vodka left and the clock's ticking the way it is, if I were you guys, I'd be a little more alert. I'm not certain what's happening. No one is. So they gave me this ginormous bowl of ice. It's so big, and there's a gallon of ice in it, at least more. It almost spilled on kitten stickers. Shackleton's craft is caught in the middle of this bowl of ice. It's that big. Captain Shackleton, I don't think we can move anymore. We're going to have to stay here all winter. Start rationing the water and tell the men to shave their balls. 2 months later, we've eaten all the leather on the boat, Captain Shackleton. We can make it. I'm Kenneth Branagh, and I'm going to underact this. Day 94. Wake up! My eyes are glued shut by pain. The script stopped being interesting on page 85. Captain Shackleton was given another command and led to go back to the Arctic one more time, where he trapped his men again for 17 months. He was given the Victoria Cross for success in an English way by being a white person who was completely shit and had no plan but somehow stumbled through to victory. Hello, I'm Boris Johnson. Tonight's program is about white excellence. You know, white men can fail again and again. My God, let's just look at the scoreboard. But time after time, they come out on top. Why? Because the system. It's been cleverly sealed so that white people come out on top. It's a secret that not a lot of people know. It's Women's History Month, and I was in San Francisco last weekend, my beloved San Francisco, which retains, by the way, much of its character. Despite the efforts of Jack Dorsey and Mark Zuckerberg and everyone else who would have San Francisco be a place where scooters are the main mode of transportation. And by scooter, I mean small white supremacist hoverboards that impinge male privilege and its toxicity on you by being shaped like penises and trying to kill you. The other day, a dude almost smoked Jennifer and I, down here in Los Angeles even. We were walking in our neighborhood, which is the Beverly Hills Triangle. And that was a joke, but please take it as you will. All right, fine, fine. Jennifer and I were floating above Bel Air in a cloud that we own, built of privilege. And someone from the underclass happened upon us. I don't think you can imagine how terrible this was. No, we were walking down the street here in Los Angeles, and a guy on a scooter kind of whipped up and, like, shot by. You know what I mean? When they're a little close, a little close. And Jennifer goes, "You kind of scared me at the last line." And the guy had headphones on, and he goes, "Yeah, I'm trying to scare people." And it's like, that's not really the right response. You might say, "I'm sorry," or, "Oh, that was bad," or, "I didn't mean to scare you," instead of, "Yeah." But men really aren't going that extra mile that much anymore. I mean, I look at politics and I see older white men shouting about how the system's rigged against them. And I'm like, really? My indication is you are the fucking system. You're ugly. You have nothing to say. You say the same shit over and over, and everyone's a freak that likes you. Okay. Yeah. Seems like everything was stacked against you. Jesus Christ, how did you get this far? With those looks and that brains. Jesus fucking Christ. And that sense of accomplishment. Jesus, look at you. Top of the fucking heap. You yelled a lot. What great yelling. You were horrible to women and gay people and people of color. You just yelled a lot, and everyone else yelled, and they booed at other people, then fucking boo! And the press was mean to you. Oh, fuck. Fuck when the press is mean. The press that's like a pliant lapdog that you rub its belly, and it goes, "Where are the Nazi biscuits?" That press. That's the press that's mean to you. I forgot. Oh, life is so confusing. I saw Dr. Ruth on the weekend. Dr. Ruth's still alive, my darlings. She's 91, and as she kept saying, "I'm almost 92! She's 3.5 feet tall. I don't know if anyone's seen the movie The Dark Crystal, but Dr. Ruth is a character from The Dark Crystal. She's so awesome. I spent ages of time with her. We did a Planned Parenthood benefit for Planned Parenthood of Northern California, which is a very vital agency, as you might assume at this late juncture, in this unbelievable shitstorm of Nazism. It was a bunch of rich liberals in a room, but awesomely they got Dr. Ruth, and I got to interview her. And dig this, and I did not know this about Dr. Ruth. I, of course, knew that she had brought a certain frankness to the discussion of the sexual being here on Earth, and that Americans are full of Puritan misery, as Lou Reed once said. And so we're incapable of discussing sex in any way but a smirky seventh grade locker room way. This is America, and that's what we're about.
She had a fucking pussy.
Pussy! So, Dr. Ruth, being from Europe, and being born some time ago, told us, to a stunned crowd, that her parents were killed in the Holocaust, but in 1939, when she was a child, she was sent to Switzerland in the Kinder transport. And all of her cohorts, a lot of them, were sent to France and Belgium, where they all perished because they were taken to the camps. And she said it was only because that she was sent to Switzerland that she was survived. They had a school there, and they looked after them, and they did not send them away with the Nazis. And that profound moment, I thought, resonated quite a deal with the crowd that was there that night, as it is with you people, and as it should. She also said that she was a sniper in the war and could take a Sten gun apart blindfolded, and that fantastically, because she gesticulates madly from her 3-foot-tall position, I never shot anyone, but I did get shot. She could be my grandmother, except my grandmother was quite short, Olive. She was about 5, but Dr. Ruth's under 4. She's so short that when we sat in regular chairs, like this short-ass chair that I was complaining about tonight, in a regular chair, she had a footstool. For real, it was like a Eugene Levy character from SCTV. Just superb. She was brave and bold and funny and hilarious, and she goes to me backstage. She goes, "You're a comedian. Don't tell any jokes because I don't get them. But I laugh anyway." Absolutely bloody marvelous. And she's written a million books and sharp as a goddamn tack. By the way, and this is something you need to know, she travels alone. She's 91. I was told by the people who worked the gig, they like, when she showed up, they're like, "Oh, she had a driver and shit who brought her, but she was alone." And you're like, "What? I don't." And then you're like, "Oh, right." Squeeze it. Don't pull it. Squeeze it. Don't pull it. Yeah, Dr. fucking Ruth. Planned Parenthood, as we discussed. Higher Heights. The election is tomorrow here in California and Texas and North Carolina, Virginia, Colorado. Super Tuesday's huge. There's some weird, obscure states. There's some giant states. By the time this airs, it'll, of course, Steve Kornacki will have already had a heart attack and been like, "This is a horse race and no one can tell and both sides are the same." And we did have a weird thing happen tonight. Chris Matthews quit on the air tonight in a bizarre Peter Finch Network moment. He's an old white guy who's been sexist his whole career. Not an unintelligent person and not even particularly illiberal. He said so many awful things to women over the years that it's really uncountable at this point. And I'm trying to present both sides of him. But the truth is, he said it on the show. He went, "I'm the old generation and I need to step aside." But he didn't finish his whole show tonight, which is the weirdest goddamn thing ever. That's like, if this had happened 30 years ago, I assure you, this no one would be talking about anything else. That an anchor abrogated complete, responsibility for the show in the middle of a show and was taken over by another person. That is, what was the meeting like before? That's all I could think of. He was called into an office, Andrew Lack, all the fucking, machas at MSNBC, and they finally, after the comment last week, what was it? Bernie winning was like the Nazis invading the Maginot line or whatever, which, by the way, I happen to like that line. I thought that was fucking funny. I hope I'm not giving too much away in my game here, but I was on Team Matthews for that one. Laura Bassett said that he hassled her and went, "Why aren't I in love with you?" There's, of course, the Hillary line. He was just, he's a human being. He needed to go. It's weird. I'm a little more interested in getting people like Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson, who clearly have crossed the line where getting paid to be a gigantic propagandists ends and begins, and that Goebbels line of absolute fucking party bullshit that goes on all the time at Fox News. To me, that would be a more interesting gambit to start firing them and start rearranging that. It's been put forward by people, not by me, But I still think it's an idea that, like, you throw out there. If Michael Bloomberg really wanted to change the world, buy Fox News and restock it. I mean, I know that's not going to happen. But the notion of it is enough to shake us into consciousness. And that's all we need, is shaking into consciousness. Why do you say that? Because people of color and women and the disadvantaged and the disenfranchised need white people to speak up for them. I'm trying to be that fucking white guy. If I'm a bummer sometimes, fuck you. If I hate Bernie, fuck you again. It's just not for me. You have to agree to disagree, okay? I understand why you like him and shit. There's a lot of problems with your personality. Mine's not perfect. What can I tell you? Shouting and screaming doesn't work for me. Being a victim doesn't work for me. Kamala Harris said she'd come home and she'd be bitching, and her mother, who was an Indian researcher, doctor, and quite an expert, would say to her, well, what are you going to do about it? And to me, that's where I don't like that because I want to be coddled. I don't like that because I'm lazy. I don't like that because I'm drunk. I don't like that because I'm the person that I am, a privileged a white person. But it's true. And so there we have to deal with the reality of it. What are you going to fucking do about it? If you ain't like the way things is, we live in California. We're so advantaged. We don't have to deal with the day-to-day shit that people in Indiana or Kentucky or South Dakota. I've been to all these states. I go to every state. The only states I haven't been to in the last year are Hawaii, Wyoming, and Louisiana. And Mississippi. But I've been I went to Mississippi like 3 years ago. I really do go to every state. And they have it rough. We have it good. So it's a great time to exert yourself. How do you mean? Like, for instance, Super Tuesday is a great time to vote. The city of Los Angeles, and this is for our listeners elsewhere, one, I want you to be jealous, but two, I want you to understand that this can happen anywhere. We can vote for 11 days, and Jennifer and I voted today, but you don't have to vote on election day. There's 11 days, and they're open all day, every day. Voting centers, they're called, because we want everything to be like a shitty sci-fi movie starring Alex Cord and Mariette Hartley. From 1978. Thank you for the two people who... I really try to hip it up, but I can't. And I think that's just magnificent. Nothing is more vital in democracy than, one, being a citizen, two, taking part, and three, voting, and four, having states that open it up. Texas has closed loads of polling places. Texas is desperate to retain the majority there. California, as you see on the other hand, the governor gave a giant speech about, at his state of the state, about homelessness. Because there is no bigger problem. You and I know it. We're sitting here in Los Angeles. Let's not be disingenuous with one another. There's loads of problems. Climate change, taxes, the price of gasoline, whatever you want to talk about. The number one problem in Los Angeles and San Francisco and Stockton and Fresno and Modesto and Bakersfield, blah, blah, blah. We need to house people. We need to feed people. We need to give them socks. We need to put them back in a house. They need health care. They need a job. That's the number one problem. We know that's what it is. We can talk about it 18 ways from fucking Wednesday. The state is not a shithole because of it. The state is a mess because of it. The dog starved at the master's gate predicts the ruin of the state. There's a giant movement forward now, I think, to try to make that right. When Tom Steyer dropped out a couple of days ago, yes, I actually said the words Tom Steyer on my show. He was the last, quote, Californian to the press. And that's weird to me. Because we're one-eighth of the country and because our gigantic sexual organs are so unbelievably alluring, dominating, and drawing everyone toward us like a shimmering sight in the... when all is darkness and there's nothing but cold air around you and swirling snowflakes, California's genitalia is a saguaro cactus alight, a Joshua tree alight, that you swarm toward to be with the other dissimilar familiars of the night, the lizard that spits fire and the trans person that makes you cake and all of those things. That's what we're about. God damn it. The only way forward is to carry on forward. If every woman that died so she could vote or not be a slave in this country doesn't count for anything, then I'm wrong. If they do, then I'm fucking right. And that's what's what. You can't discount that. Men have had the upper hand forever. White men have had the upper hand since day Jack fucking, you know, doodle one fucking sting, 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 do what did he fucking.
Give me crack cone and I don't care.
What is it? Camptown Races sing this song, doo-dah, a doo-dah. Gwina run all white, gwina run all day. Women have to be elected to office. When they are, what happens? Well, what happens is this. Val Demings and Zoe Lofgren and Sylvia Garcia are impeachment managers. Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker of the House. Ayanna Pressley and Lauren Underwood and Katie Porter and Amy Klobuchar and Kiki Gillibrand and Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren run for president. Yes, and Tulsi Gabbard fucking too. And Marianne Williamson too. Women are allowed to not be excellent. Men have been allowed to be as shitty as Donald Trump forever. Women are allowed to be Marianne Williamson and Tulsi Gabbard. I don't dig it. I don't like it. You don't like it. No one don't like it. We don't like it. We don't like it. I don't like it. We don't like it. It doesn't matter what you like or don't fucking like. It's important that Tulsi Gabbard and Marianne Williamson are in the mix because men are shit forever. Jennifer said today, a friend of ours, who works for a very important organization dealing with civil rights in this country, in fact, an American Civil Liberties Union. There was a discussion about Biden and whatnot. And I'm not a big fan of old white men. I'm an old white man, and I'm not a big fan of old white men. But sometimes wagons have to be circled and shit. And Jennifer's response was, I had to vote for Fritz Mondale and Michael Dukakis. This whole idea of being in love with shit, are you joking me? Literally, in my lifetime, I've had to vote for people that I was like, this is some marginal shit. I don't think Walter Mondale and Michael Dukakis were bad people. I don't at all. I think they were good people. Do I think they were great presidential candidates? Anyway, about the Ides of March. Love is too important to waste on a political election. You need to be in the mind of like Lenin in like 1916. Real politic. Let's get to what's what. Who can win? Where do the bodies go? And at the end of this, can we make any fucking progress? The last election in 2018 was startling and exciting. 115 women went into the House. There's one black woman in the Senate. There's two black men in the Senate. One's Republican, one's Democrat, Cory Booker and Tim Scott. Who, by the way, Chris Matthews confused Tim Scott with Jamie Harrison, who's running for Mitch McConnell's seat in the Senate in Kentucky, who's black. That's part of the reason why there was the meeting tonight and he had to resign on the air. He can't tell the difference between black people. I grant you, as a journalist, it would be important for you to understand facts first and foremost. Ron Fairley was a baseball player. He played for the Brooklyn Dodgers. He played for the Los Angeles Dodgers. He played for the Montreal Expos. He was later in his career an announcer for the San Francisco Giants and the Seattle Mariners. I was in a movie called The Phantom Menace, which is the greatest of all the Star Wars movies. Hands down.
The god of film has just arrived.
I have adjudicated. The greatest of all the Star Wars films is the fourth one. Episode one, The Phantom Menace.
What is it that makes it so great?
Jar Jar Binks.
In the majesty of that movie, Where was I leading with this? I've got too caught up in my own fucking bullshit. We can cut this part out. We're not gonna, but we should probably. We were talking about the election, but where did I leave off before the Star Wars? Anyone? No. I did voice the podcast announcer. In those days, we called it a... well, there was no podcast. It was the pod race. Thank you. God damn it, Michael. Michael Snyder's here. I was the Ron Fairley of the race. Ron Fairley was the Giants announcer in the 80s with Hank Greenwald. Thank you. Hank Greenwald once, by the way, Michael, I was in Heathrow, and he was in the gift shop. I'm not kidding. I can't remember what terminal. That's irrelevant. Jennifer and I were with him, and I went, oh, my God, there's the Giants announcer, Hank Greenwald. This was in the 90s. Hank Greenwald would go, hey, kids, Tuesday is bat day. Like, he just was hilarious. Like, he just, when it got to promotions, Hank, like, when it was the game, he was really interested. Oh, here comes John Smoltz. Well, John Smoltz had 14 strikeouts over the last, but when it was the fucking promos, he'd go, tonight's broadcast is under the Major League Baseball, and any rebroadcast of this will be under the consent of, he, like, just didn't give a shit. It was great. So when he would do the promotions, which in those days was bat day and ball day and glove day and shit like that, he'd go, hey, kids, Tuesday, July 17th is glove day. Every fan that arrives in the first 20,000 fans will get a Chili Davis glove. Anyways, his partner was Ron Fairley. God, this show's going to fucking make it. Right? I just feel confident again. Ron Fairley, there were two pitchers on the Giants. One was named Mark Grant, and the other was named Mark Davis. Mark Davis was a left-hander? Have I inverted them? No. Mark Davis was left-handed. Mark Grant was right. No. It doesn't matter. For the purposes of the story, let's say it's the one way. So here we go. By the way, when you're watching baseball, if a pitcher's pitching with his right hand, it's like this. If he's pitching with his left hand, it's like this. So it's fairly obvious the difference between two people. And Ron Fairley go, Mark Davis is out. Oh, I'm sorry, it's Mark Grant. And then he go, ground ball to short. And no, check that. Well, what happened was this. So as the announcer in The Phantom Menace, I had no idea when I went in for the audition, and I thought, I'll do Ron Fairley. So I went, that little human being is out of his mind. Because Ron Fairley, wow. Not a bad ball player. So, it's Women's History Month. And if you want to vote for women, that's a very important thing. As I said, the Virginia legislature, the Congress of the United States, imagine the Senate with 55 women, with the representational portion of women, instead of the men that are there. Chuck Grassley, who's that unbelievable knob from Nebraska? Ben Sasse, who tries to play it both ways. Mitch McConnell, who's unspeakably evil. Are you going to spin any poetry on this? Okay. Mitch McConnell is an albino cave salamander that, through the centuries in the vast repository of water-filled caverns of Kentucky, has lost his sense of humanity. All that's left to him are Secretary of Transportation Chao's connections to China and the bilious underpinnings of stacking the entire judiciary of the United States for the next 25 years. His evil extends in every direction, like a thousand tendrils from a sea anemone at the bottom of the Marianas Trench that Pia Zadora went to in the bathysphere. Did I say Pia Zadora? I meant Taylor Swift. No, who's this one? Jennifer, who's this one? Ariana Grande. Thank you for recognizing that. I love Ariana Grande, by the way. But she does look like this. Here's my impression of Kristen Stewart in all the Twilight movies. It's Women's History Month, Greg. This is bullshit. All right. Let me do some men for you then. Here's my impression of Jeremy Irons in The Watchmen. Higher Heights pushes women of color forward, black women. They're spelled Higher Heights. She Should Run is another place you can go to donate and look for on Twitter and the internet machine. Oh, goodness. Emily's List, of course, well-known. WomenCount.org, which I think we're going to have some more involvement with quite soon. WomenCount.org pushes Democratic women forward in every slate. And you can break it down by your personal needs. I know it's really important for you to identify with candidates. Women's History Month includes this from, was it Kevin Schroff? I think it was. Hillary Clinton. I don't need to say her last name because you knew when I said Hillary who I fucking meant. And a lot of people have, you know. All right, here's something. The other day, I tweeted this thing, and I realized that talking about your tweets is a fruitless exercise, and that it makes me sound like 45, because tweeting is another neighborhood, and if you were really working on what you were doing, you wouldn't be concentrating on tweeting at all. However, social media has a certain drive in our realm and whatnot, and I tweeted a couple of pictures because Bernie said that the Republican and Democratic establishment better look out for them because they're not, you know, gonna fucking take any Play-Doh, you know, Fun Factory Juniors or whatever. I don't know. It was some threat toward the Republican and Democratic establishment, which to me made it seem like it was equal, the Republican and Democratic establishment, which it isn't. The Republican establishment are Nazis. And are anti-Semitic and racist and put babies in cages and are wildly misogynistic and homophobic and all transphobic, all those things. And the Democratic establishment, as lethargic and corporate as it might seem to some people, has produced a couple of figures. I'd like to introduce them to you. Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton. And if voting for Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton made me a centrist, bootlicking, take-the-knee asshole, then I'm happy to assume that mantle. I really am. I was not unproud to vote for Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. I think they were really decent people who were calm and exceptionally intelligent and canny and cogent and understood the political situation that's going on. I know everyone's uncomfortable now, but I'm going to go through this anyway because I don't give a fucking shit at this point. And here we go. I posted pictures of Adam Schiff, all the impeachment managers. And I thought the impeachment, by the way, as unsuccessful it was because of the absolute determination of Mitch McConnell and the Republican Senate to stuff it before it even began, originating in the House and with the organization of Nancy Pelosi and those in the charge of that body, moved swiftly along. The people that she picked, Adam Schiff, Jerry Nadler, Val Demings, Zoe Lofgren, Hakeem Jeffries, Jason Crow, Sylvia Garcia. Sylvia Garcia was a judge in Texas. Jason Crow fought in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and is a first-term congressperson. Sitting on no committees, she plucked him with a white guy. Hakeem Jeffries is, of course, a leading light, as you know, and maybe the next speaker, because Nancy has to, you know, give way at some point. Zoe Lofgren had more experience in impeachment than any person in the House or Senate, having worked on both the Nixon impeachment committee and the Bill Clinton impeachment committee. Val Demings was a law enforcement officer and brought unbelievable noise to the impeachment hearings. Jerry Nadler, as you know, chair of the committee, and Adam Schiff, whose eloquence was unsurpassed, literally a Lincoln-like eloquence. It's midnight in Washington. You cannot count on him to do the right thing, not now, not tomorrow, not the next day, not ever. That's what we're talking about here. If that makes me an establishment, bootlicking centrist, corporate, neoliberal, warmongering, I bombed Livia fuckface, then I accept that fate. I'm sorry. Perhaps it's my advanced years or my illiberalism, the poison liberal that I am. I feel that if I put a picture up that includes Hakeem Jeffries and Val Demings and Nancy Pelosi and the other pictures I put up were Hillary Clinton and Michelle and Barack Obama. And I got trolled like a big dog. And I don't, it doesn't hurt me emotionally. To me, it seems like a real mechanical response, like a bot response. And that's what troubles me more than anything else. That the misinformation and the disinformation has overtaken our ability to conspire with one another and to disagree with one another and to argue in the playing field with one another. I perceive it as being, a picture I put subsequent to it was me with, and Jennifer with Kamala Harris with Kirsten Gillibrand, and then me with two local officials, Danica Rame, who's in the Virginia House of Delegates, who's a trans woman, and Andrea Jenkins, who's a trans woman in Minneapolis on the city council. And getting trolled for that, I feel like, at a certain point, you have to understand, there's a lot of women up here. There's a lot of people of color up here. There's a lot of trans people here. I know you want what you want, and I want it too. I want there to be, although I was accused of it, not today. I want health care for people. I want all the good things. I want rainbows and unicorns to run through a field and fucking dispense fucking free shit to me out of their ass. I want it as much as anyone else. But I also feel like we have to find some sort of common ground and not be so vicious with one another. When I see the cantankerousness and the homophobia, that's when I get off the train. Moving on to Women's History Month, Hillary Clinton was, I'll get back on mic. Hillary Clinton was the first lady with a postgraduate degree and a professional career, the first lady to run for elected office, the first woman to win the Iowa caucus. She was also senator of New York, which was unprecedented and is unprecedented. Democratic nomination for president, and I believe she won the presidency and had it taken away from her. She was the first woman to win the popular vote for president. And other than Barack Obama, she has the most votes. In other words, no white man ever had as many votes as Hillary Clinton did. And that is progress. Kittens McTavish. Let's see. Selma had the 55th anniversary a couple of days ago. The Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma was a flashpoint and a fire point some 55 years ago for a bunch of civil rights marchers, who include John Lewis, who showed up there yesterday. All of the Democratic candidates showed up. Tom Steyer, even. I've said Tom Steyer twice in the show now, who dropped out the night before. Joe Biden was there. Pete Buttigieg. And by the way, let's just take a moment. I haven't been overly fair with Pete Buttigieg, and for a dazzling variety of reasons, but I'd like to stop now and try to set the record a little aright. Pete Buttigieg won the Iowa caucus, and so therefore he is the first gay person to win a primary in the United States. And that's a profound moment. So, as I often said in the old days when Obama was president and everyone liked the show, before post-2016 when only some people liked the show, is that you can ground your tiny fist into your hips and you can stamp your tiny boots into the ground, but progress moves forward. A gay man wins a primary. Women run for president. All these things happen, and they're going to happen whether you want them to or not. And you can have all the weird, you know, Hitler Youth rallies you want with the same repetitive screaming and yelling and weird lock her up and all that jazz that they do over and over and over again. The definition of insanity is two things. Doing a podcast far past the time that it should have been stopped, and two, repeating the same actions over and over and expecting a different outcome. And I really feel that. what he's doing. Also, let's talk about, and not in an ageist way, because the older I get, the more sensitive I am to ageism. However, I'm not that goddamn old, and some people are that goddamn old, and by some people I mean everyone who's running for president. Literally. And some of them haven't been having that great of health lately. I mean, you know. So 45's dragging his right foot, and he's jerking his head back all the time, and he holds podiums and tables with something close to a fervency, and he stands with this weird position where his arms are not akimbo, but like adjacent, and he pushes forward with his hips and back, and he might even be wearing some terrible structural thing on his, yes, on the sacroiliac. And to me, that all screams onset dementia on top of what I believe is an inconceivable penchant for drugs. As a person who has an inconceivable penchant for drugs, I recognize it in another kindred spirit, and particularly one whose eyes are as pink and piggish as his are. I wear a lot of makeup, but oh my goodness. He's not looking well. This is a tidal wave of disaster waiting to be aborning. And so, in the midst of all this, a giant pandemic manifests itself. Not to the level of the 1918 Spanish flu, or when I was a child, the Hong Kong flu, which I had, or any other of the giant pandemics, Ebola, whatnot. He appointed Mike Pence the czar of the coronavirus, and it's clear why. Mike Pence presided over Indiana when there was an HIV outbreak that was completely preventable. And secondly, he is in fact a Christian wizard. Much like many of the saints of many centuries. And so I commend you to the hands of Mike Pence. No. Here's the issue. When someone is a pathological liar, like Orange 45, Mango Mussolini, the Kremlin-controlled carrot, when someone is as much of a pathological liar as him, and he's absolutely been incapable, not just incapable, there's a function inside him that's unwilling to tell the truth. He would lie about the time for practice. He doesn't have any impetus to ever tell the truth about anything because he feels like lying is a better gambit for him. Then when something happens that really requires the truth, a war, a pandemic, we're unable to rely on him because he says things like, it's going to go away, it's going to be like a miracle. It's a democratic hoax. It's going to leave in April when the weather gets warmer. He said all these things this week. And so, therefore, we're left sorting out our own fate in the face of a gigantic pandemic that's not unreal. I'm willing to touch all of you. I touched all of you tonight. We're all willing to touch one another. I don't think that's the point as much as it can only get better from here. All right, hear me out. It's going to be shitty for a while, and then it's going to be shitty for a while more. We've learned a couple of things over the last 3 years, and should have learned them through our whole lives. That people who have a capacity for weakness, venality, bribery, tawa, a penchant for violence, a terrible misogyny and racism, not only are available, but are more susceptible than they ever were and are in droves running toward that terrible end. On the other hand, John Lewis was in the march 55 years ago for Selma, and he was in the march 2 days ago. And he said, we have to be ready for good trouble. You have to get yourself out there. There's nothing for it but to fight. Laying down in the face of evil and being afraid in the face of evil is the last thing we can do. The first thing you can do is sign up. And that means get up tomorrow morning, do the three things you can do, do the five things you can do, do the one thing you can do. But that's it. You have to. Too many people have literally died for the right to vote. Women, slaves, people of color in this country, the people who are in cages right now, you owe it to them. You owe it to yourself. If you fucking cave in now, what are you going to tell your grandchildren? What are you going to tell your children? Do you think the people in World War II went, oh, fuck. Yeah, they fucking did. The people in the 60s did. That would be the people a little bit older than me. I was but a child then, of course. I was watching the banana splits. But people older than me had to deal with a boatload of fucking shit. And it's every generation's responsibility to do just that. And it's not just an onerous responsibility and terribly spooky and scary and awful. It's also something that has to dignify your life. I can't guarantee a win, but I can guarantee that if we fucking try, we can fucking win. Right? That's all there is. You've been the smartest crowd in the world. I've been the smartest man in the world. May every page you turn be a satchel page. May every bell you ring be a cool Papa Bell. If you have to buy bonds, hit a tater with Barry Bonds. Good night.